describe what they're doing right now?
Well, I think that they're getting ready to fuel the RTG cask, which is a slightly tricky operation because they have to reach up, tilt the cask.
This is the
over.
radioactive
the hot
thermal generator. Yeah.
Right, the hot source. Tilt it over with a special tool and extract the nuclear self.
Affirmative.
Call
we
from
heard
combat.
It now for about the past 45 minutes.
Asking if we hear the noise.
That's right. What? So wait, what is it?
They're asking what the noise is in the background.
Definitely tried to isolate it, and it appears though it's coming on the downlink word, coming from the limb.
It's coming on the downlink, coming from the limb, this noise we're hearing. The astronauts hear it and now are asking what it is. Go ahead, Don.
Oh, they have to extract the fuel capsule assembly from the cask, which is mounted to the right side of the ladder of the limb. With a special tool, and of course it's hot, and then insert the fuel capsule into the thermopile, which is a small capsule with fins on it, which is the fins being there to radiate the heat from the thermopile itself. And then they must carry the ALSIP out to the deployment area as expeditiously as possible, because while they're carrying it, the thermopile will be heating up and getting hotter and hotter, and the temperature on those fins then gets to a point where they wouldn't want to touch it once they get it out and deployed. So they'd like to get it out to the position where they'll finally deploy the total ALSIP as rapidly as they can.
Do you know what the package weighs to them there on the surface of the moon, how much weight they feel as though they're lifting?
It would be about 50 pounds. Feel equivalent of 50 pounds. The total weight of the package is 300 pounds.
Six times that, since the Earth has
right.
six times the pull
right.
of gravity.
That's right.
Comment, there you go, from Pete Conrad as they're working on this system.
Rhett Turner, if I may, I'd like to toss a question to Don Beatty there in Houston. Don, how many of the experiments need the electric power, the nuclear energy power from this generator?
All of the experiments.
All of them?
All of the experiments. There'll be six experiments on the package, if you include the dust detector.
Right.
And all of the experiments need power for one purpose or another, for thermal control, for data transmission, and for operation itself of the instrument.
So the operation of this generator is vital to all of these experiments.
It's absolutely essential. If it doesn't put out the proper wattage, then we won't be getting any information back from the package.
I believe about 65 watts, a
That's
very
right.
small amount of power. These instruments don't draw an immense amount of electric power, but this small nuclear generator should work for several years.
That's right. It should. All the tests indicate that it should continue to deliver power at the required level for several years after it started.
Well, some of our journalist colleagues are speculating on the cause of the problem with the color TV camera. They've come up with the fact that the camera was first set up when it was taken out of the mesa facing the sun, that perhaps this caused the problem. Any comments on that, gentlemen?
We have made the same observation a time or two, and that is, of course, pure reporter speculation, having no foundation in fact at this point, because I think all of the reporters here in Houston were aware that we heard the astronauts say that it went by the sun and they wanted to move it quickly, and from then on we didn't have a picture. From the splotch before us on the screen, though, it doesn't look like just a plain Vidicon image 2 burn. It looks as though the color wheel or some mechanism is partially stuck there in front of it. We could see a partial blur of one of the astronauts moving around in the light in front of the camera while Albin was, it was Albin, I believe, while he was trying to work on it.
Rhett Turner, in regard to that color wheel, wasn't there a modification made in this camera changing the color wheel from nylon to metal to solve a problem, too?
In the original color camera built by the Westinghouse Corporation, the small color wheel used was had some nylon idler wheels which transferred the motor power to the color wheel. Well, this was made to operate in an earth room environment inside the command module, where it would always have full air pressure and also a moderate temperature of some 70 degrees Fahrenheit. In adapting this same camera to operate in the vacuum of the lunar environment with the different heat ranges, these nylon wheels had to be changed to metal, and a small motor had to be installed, which did not draw as much current. And there was considerable labor in getting this adaptation to work. Something was very delicate. It's possible that the astronauts jarred it in removing it from the mesa, or it's possible that excessive light did do some harm to the mechanism. With, of course, this is all speculation. The astronauts we're listening to in one ear here while I'm talking to you appear to be working with that thermal unit. Did you hear them say anything about whether they had it in the cask, Don?
No, I wasn't monitoring their conversation at the time.
How far away from the lunar module, from the Intrepid, will they set up the ALSEP experiments?
They are expected to go, in fact, Pete Conrad and Al Bean both mentioned, up to 1,000 feet. They're so close to the surveyor, though, who knows how far they go. They're expected to go at least 300 feet, some 100 meters, up to 300 meters and maybe a little beyond 300 meters distance, to get it as far away as practical so that it will not be harmed by the lunar module blast when it takes off.
Don Beatty, perhaps you could clarify something for me. In looking at the ALSEP experiment data, I see a solar wind spectrometer experiment. Am I right? Are there two solar experiments, one composition, one spectrometer? Are these different?
Yes, they are. They are different. The solar wind composition experiment is collecting particles that are spewing out from the sun, and these particles become embedded in the aluminum foil, and these are then brought back to Earth for analysis. And the solar wind spectrometer is actually measuring particles from the solar wind in place on the moon, measuring their energy and giving us some idea of what the composition of these particles is.
Gentlemen, we'll be coming back to you shortly for a further description of this first moonwalk. It has been underway now for about 1 hour and 38 minutes. As correspondent Turner reported to you earlier, severe problem with the color TV camera. In fact, it's not working at all at the moment. However, all the other planned experiments are being deployed. The contingency samples have been picked up, and some of the photography has already been set up, as well as...
Bill McCrory?
Yes.
I'm just, in listening to the astronauts, let's listen to the astronauts.
Cool. So I tried using different pins at different holes. That doesn't appear to have any effect. It operates... everything operates just exactly like it does in the training mock-ups and up at GE. The only problem is it just won't come out of the cast. I'm suspicious that it's just pulling in there something and friction holding it in.
They're having...
But it's such a delicate tool, I really hate to pull on it too hard. I think what we could do...
Hey, I'll be right with
you. Just that hammer and bang on the side of it.
No, I got a better idea. Where's the hammer?
That's what I said.
No, they are having...
I want to try and... Put the back end in under that lip there, prior out. Let me go get the hammer.
The astronauts are having some trouble removing the heater element from its storage container in order to insert it into the generator unit. And let's listen. This is the radioactive element in a special cask in which it's stored on the spacecraft.
Al Bean having difficulty removing the radioisotope fuel element from its storage cast.
That's Jack Riley in Mission Control interpreting also there.
Al, when you're working on that, try to make sure you've got the pins all the way in, tighten up on it, then you can try pushing down on a little before you pull it out.
Okay. Don't touch these things. She's broke off, that's all she broke.
Yeah, I understand.
Don't count on anything you did.
No, I'm not going to.
Okay.
This is a complicated mechanism. It's a handle with a tripod of pins on the front and a screw in the middle, attached to a long handle, sort of like a broom handle.
But it did the job. I mean, it just doesn't do the job. Oh, man, look at this dust fly.
They see dust flying around the room in the area as they're moving. Their feet are probably kicking up dust as they work. This stowage cask is mounted to the side of one of the legs of the lunar module. They're outside there working with it, trying to remove this hot element that you heard Don Beatty describe with a special tool. It's coming out. It's coming out. They have it now.
Come on.
Come on.
Keep going, baby. That hammer's a universal tool. Better believe it's there.
We got it.
We got it, says Pete Conrad. And laughs again. That's beautiful,
well done,
they say.
Troops.
Well done.
We got it, babe. It fits in the RTG real well. It's just a cast. It's holding it in on the side.
They have finally removed...
Houston, 1 minute to LOS.
They have finally removed the cask, the radioactive unit from the cask. Let's see if they get it into the thermal unit.
That's it.
If, they have deposited it into the thermal unit, so we have passed one small crisis here, at least. All right, we'll be reporting more of the astronauts' activities in just a few moments from Houston.
The Voice of America continuing its live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. The Apollo 12 lunar landing module, the Intrepid, has been on the surface of the moon now 6 hours and 18 minutes. The astronauts have been outside the spacecraft on their first moonwalk about 1 hour and 42 minutes. We'll continue our live coverage of this moonwalk by Charles Pete Conrad and Alan Bean immediately following this summary of Late World News. Two jubilant astronauts are exploring the surface of the moon. A worldwide television audience shared the moment as Charles Conrad and Alan Bean became the third and fourth men in history to set foot on the moon. Later, an undetermined problem disturbed television transmission. The crew made brief but unsuccessful attempts to perform on-the-spot repair, then proceeded with collection of lunar rock samples and deployment of scientific experiments. The crew said it would make another attempt later to fix the television camera, if time permits. Command pilot Conrad emerged first from the Intrepid and stepped carefully down the ladder to the lunar surface. While Bean waited patiently for his turn to step on the moon, Conrad went to work almost immediately on collection of a small contingency sample of lunar rocks and dust. While working, he kept up a steady stream of conversation with the waiting Bean and ground controllers in Houston. At times, he hummed a tune. Often, he broke out in a hearty laugh. Conrad reported no major problems moving around on the lunar surface. He said he had to walk a little slower than he expected, and he noted that he had to pay careful attention to his balance in the 1/6 lunar gravity while wearing a heavy life support system as a backpack. Conrad summed up the moon as a place where he could, as he put it, work all day. This exploration, the first of two planned for the mission, followed a textbook landing in the moon's ocean of storms, only about 200 meters from the Surveyor 3 moon probe, which landed there about 2.5 years ago. In their second moonwalk, several hours from now, Conrad and Bean planned to walk over to the Surveyor and retrieve parts of it for return to the Earth. Japanese Premier Eisaku Sato will sit down with President Nixon later today to discuss a wide range of subjects important to the two countries. the return of Okinawa to Japan, the growing United States trade deficit with Japan, and maintenance of security forces in Asia are high on the agenda. The talks are expected to continue through Friday, when a joint communique will be issued. Premier Sato's departure for Washington provoked violent demonstrations by Japanese leftist radicals who oppose continued close security ties between Japan and the United States. United States and Soviet representatives will meet for the second time tomorrow as preliminary talks continue on strategic arms limitations. The two sides met Tuesday at the United States Embassy in Helsinki. Tomorrow's meeting will be at the Soviet Embassy. The meetings are described as preliminary and exploratory to define the basis for future substantive negotiations. Secretary of State William Rogers says the Nixon administration plans new moves in an effort to improve relations with Communist China. Appearing on a special television program, Mr. Rogers said the United States, among other things, wants to resume direct talks with Peking at the ambassadorial level. Such talks were held between 1955 and 1968 in Warsaw, but none has been held in almost 2 years. Mr. Rogers also says diplomatic contacts have been made with North Vietnam since the death of Ho Chi Minh in September. But he added, it would be wrong to suggest that they have indicated any progress. The secretary gave that assessment after talking privately with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The committee chairman, Senator William Fulbright, said the stumbling block to a Vietnam settlement is creation of a government under which a free election could be held. B-52 bombers pounded enemy positions near the Cambodian border, where South Vietnamese troops inflicted heavy North Vietnamese casualties in two recent clashes near the Buk Prang and Duk Lap Special Forces camps. The two camps have been under pressure from an estimated 5,000 North Vietnamese troops who moved into the Central Highlands region from Cambodian bases. The United Arab Republic National Assembly has accused the United States of being directly responsible for the Middle East crisis. The Cairo Assembly said Israel never would have defied the 1967 United Nations Security Council resolution if it had not received U.S. military, economic, and political backing. Meanwhile, four African and Asian countries have asked for a United Nations investigation into alleged Israeli mistreatment of Arabs in occupied areas. Libya and Sudan announced that next month's Arab summit conference in Rabat will be a positive step in bolstering Arab forces against Israel. And Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Dayan says that Arab guerrillas in Lebanon threaten that country's sovereignty and dignity. The trial of Australian Michael Rohan, charged with setting fire to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, has entered its final stages in Jerusalem. The prosecution opened its summation by telling the Israeli court that it has been proven that the defendant willfully and unlawfully tried to burn the mosque. Rohan is pleading insanity. President Nixon has asked Congress for new powers to cut foreign trade tariffs in an effort to improve United States competition in world markets. The president proposes that Congress abolish the so-called U.S. selling price method of levying trade tariffs, which determines tariffs by a foreign product's price in the United States rather than in the country of origin. But at the same time, the president recommends protecting the interests of U.S. goods by relaxing regulations that provide relief when increased imports harm any domestic industry. A small Mexican Aero taxi with a pilot and five passengers aboard was diverted to Havana at gunpoint. Havana dispatches say the diversion occurred while the small plane was flying between Mérida and Cozumel. Meanwhile, the Brazilian Cruzeiro do Sol airliner that was diverted to Cuba 1 week ago is reported to have left Havana on its return flight to Brazil. Mechanical difficulties are said to have delayed the return of the small airliner. That is the latest news from the Voice of America. This is Clark Thornton reporting. And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Today, the successful landing on the surface of the moon of the lunar landing craft Intrepid. That landing came at 6 hours 54 Greenwich Mean Time, some 6 hours and 26 minutes ago. The spacecraft was right on the beam, right at the point desired for landing. Landed within 180 meters of the crater containing the Surveyor 3 spacecraft in the Sea of Storms. At the moment, both astronauts, Pete Conrad and Alan Bean, are in the midst of their first moonwalk, their first EVA. They're in about 1 hour and 50 minutes of this first EVA, which will run a total of about 3 hours and 30 minutes. A problem with the color television camera, which is not working. At the moment, they are very busy deploying the ALSEP experiments. These are the key experiments that will be set up to send back important scientific data, powered by a nuclear electric generator. Now let's go back to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston, Texas, for a status report. Correspondent Rhett Turner.
The astronauts are now some 130 to 150 meters away from the lunar module. Let's listen to this communication. It's a lot clearer. They're,
I think it'd be a real good spot.
They found a spot to deploy the ALSEP package, and they have gone to a mound. Don, how high did they say it appeared to be? About a meter and a half high and some 4 to 5 feet
high, as I remember, and they said at the base it was about 15 feet in diameter.
And we can see this feature on our detailed map here. I think this is the spot right here, says Al Bean.
Make sure now that we're going to have a good place for everything.
This is...
This is... And seismometer will sit in a good flat place. Although, trouble with a seismometer, we don't have any good solid bedrock or anything to set it on. All we've got is this dirt. I don't see any area around that has any rock.
Roger, Al.
We're just going to have to take what we can get on a seismometer.
The seismometer, there don't see any solid ground to put the seismometer portion on. They're northwest of the landing site.
Thermal expansion or something. I'm having a heck of a time getting this UAT in this side. Get this flat one in here. Well, just pick it up with your hands. I always handle the side with my hands. I can't bend down that far.
The UHT?
That's the universal tool that they're using as a carrying device and for other...
UHT is the universal handling tool. The side is the superthermal ion detector experiment.
They're using all of the acronyms there.
Right. The tool is used to both carry the ALSEP and then to help deploy the instruments from the packages themselves. These mounds are apparently quite interesting. We can only see one on the map that we have here, but they've said that there are several of the mounds in the immediate vicinity, and it's been suggested from Mission Control that they walk over to the mounds and see if there is a central vent or hole in the mound, because they've described them as looking like a volcano.
They're now disconnecting the barbell arrangement. This is he's going as far out as he can from the central station with a super thermal ion detector. Lunar ionosphere measure device.
Al, when you deploy that PSE stool, it would help if you tamp that ground down as well as you could before putting the stool down.
I'm going to try to do that. This ground is... it doesn't get hard if you move down a couple inches. You can tamp it, and that's what I plan to do, but I don't know. We're about to see what happens. I'm worried about it getting a thermal shark myself.
Roger, Al.
This, of course, is the seismometer device he's referring to. They would like to have it on as solid a ground as possible, even on rocks, so that it would be a better measurement device for measuring earthquake activity on the moon. Seismic activity,
yeah, also. Boy, they're sure carrying that out. Look at the outfit.
I know.
Ridiculous. I remember how they took care of this white paint. You had to have gloves.
They're kicking up a lot of dust.
Apparently, as we saw on the Apollo 11, when the astronauts walked near the rim of craters, the material was much, much softer, and they sank in quite a bit more than they did out in the flat areas. And in the area that they're working, near the Surveyor crater and near the Head crater, they are actually operating in the ejecta areas from these craters, so they're apparently working in loose, soft material everywhere they're working right now.
We hope they don't get too much dirt on the central station or on the thermal unit.
They sure flare around under this 1/6G, don't they? They move around a bunch. Where's the orange stripe? Watch it. Where's the orange stripe? Should be same as on that other one. Obviously, it's on the side I can't see.
They're right by the left ear of the head of the snowman, the lunar crater configuration. So they've moved some 130 to 50 meters or so from the landing
that noise,
site.
It's whistling coming from you, because every time you move around, it whistles. You stop and quit.
Al thinks he's discovered what's
That's
causing
right.
the whistle.
Yes. There it is. Did it lock good? Yes, sir. Okay, all right, now wait a minute. Here's good. Drop that baby. Okay, you got it? And the cable right there.
Each of these experiment units has a cable attached to it, back to a central station, which analyzes data, processes it, and transmits it to Earth.
We should start getting...
problem of the dirt.
Wait a minute, the little, I see, that's it here. Had a boy. Hey, turn it over with your other hand, Pete. Wait a minute, we face it up. Don't worry. Where do you want to go with it?
Before they leave the ALSIP, they'll be, of course, turning it on, and we should be getting signals back here to Houston from some of the experiments, so we'll have an idea whether the station is operating correctly even before they terminate the EVA.
There is another antenna on that central station which they must point at the Earth, and so we should get a confirmation, and possibly...
That's right.
For the final time, if you'd also tamp that ground down, it would help in keeping the dirt off of the thermally sensitive areas.
Ed Gibson referring to the thermally sensitive areas that shouldn't be dusted.
There, you got them. Now, secure this, hold it steady, then I can do the rest.
They're working with one of the units. I believe that's the power station they're working with, since he's mentioning the tongs.
Game where you get the ALSIP up here. Yep, one crater and over another. Oh, man. Is that like as good as it's
I think Al's a bit more tired than Pete.
But I'll tell you the way to do.
He carried it out there.
Tend to rock from side to side as you run like that. There you go. You really move better that way.
Al is advising Pete on a method of loping that is more efficient than moving about on the surface. He says rock from side to side as you go.
Houston, I'm not kidding. We are really getting dirty out here. There's no way to handle all this equipment. With all the dust on it, every time you move something, the dust flies in this low gravity. It really takes off. It goes way up in the air and it comes down and lands on you.
That's Al Bean, reporting the dust flying.
How far do you estimate we're from the land? 600 feet? 700 feet? At least.
I think you're right.
600, 700 feet. Way to do it.
Here I come. Picking the stump.
I wish we could see this. Pete Conrad bounding about, laughing and going, dum-de-dum-de-dum. He is obviously enjoying the feeling of the 1/6 gravity on the moon as they're deploying the ALSEP experiment. If they're 600 feet, that's about over 200 meters. They're almost past the head of the snowman in that case.
Well, perhaps the landing site is a little bit further back on the edge of the Surveyor crater, too. Because if they're out there by the mounds, we know where that point is.
That mound is clearly distinguishable in photographs taken from lunar orbiters. I believe, isn't it?
That's right.
The antenna mast.
Now he's erecting the antenna mast on the central transmission station of the ALSEP package. I didn't hear him mention opening up the arms of the magnetometer. They have their procedures well worked out.
Sure,
I hope
like
they do.
Get down low enough to get it off. I'll do it for you if you can. Okay, wait a minute. Let me move that dust cover for you. I'm just drinking. Okay, just be too flat. Hey, that's because
I'm drunk. The astronauts have been outside for 2 hours and 2 minutes now. Trying to get some of the dirt off to the central station. Conrad says if I could bend over, we'd have the job done by now. They seem to be several minutes ahead of schedule in this deployment.
I had to really push that other one. Look at all that dust.
The dust continuing to fly around them every time they move their feet. As Al Bean says, it comes up off the surface when you kick it and falls on you. The whistling sound apparently is coming from Pete Conrad's unit.
It did it. We won't touch the shorting plug. Okay, we've connected the RTG to the central station, Houston.
Connected the thermal generator to the central station.
I got the antenna mast. All right. Get up.
The RTG is the radioisotope thermal generator which will power the experiments in ALSEP. These experiments being deployed 600 to 700 feet west and a little north of the LAM.
It opened, Houston, and we closed it again, and we got no dirt on it.
Roger, Pete. Well done.
They didn't get dirt on one of the vital units. They said they opened and closed the central station they're referring to there. Astronaut has to tell another what his feet are doing. He can't see straight down.
Here she comes.
tamping the dirt down.
Down, sunlight.
Go. On the central station.
There you go.
There you go.
How's that? That's good. Ready to go to work. Go. Have at it.
Ready to
okay,
go to work.
Well, I gotta let
the climate
is
solar
wind, huh?
He's about to put out the solar wind. Solar wind is going.
Houston, how are we doing on the timeline?
Call to Houston on the timeline, how they're doing in their schedule. Answer yet from Ed Gibson, the capsule communicator.
You read me up?
Sure do.
Hello, Houston, how are we doing on the timeline?
They may be talking
again. They're guessing that...
Al, did you have a reading on the shorting amps?
Wait a minute, I get it. Hold the phone. You read me, Houston?
Sure do. Go ahead.
Ed Gibson apparently didn't understand their question to him. The capsule communicator hasn't understood their request on timeline report. He had a question of his own to Conrad and Bean.
Can't see that needle anywhere. Can you out?
Let me see it. Let me help you.
Pete Nell, at 2 hours and 7 minutes into the EVA, you're about 5 minutes behind.
Okay. Hold me a little bit. Going back to mid cooling. What do you need? Hold me a little. Look. Okay. Easy. Can you see a needle in there? I don't either. That's what's bothering me. It's not reading zero, and I don't see a needle. I don't even see a needle in there, Houston. Yeah, okay, let's quit screwing with it. Great, get off the timeline. And where it went.
This, I believe, is the solar wind experiment, which does have a leveling device in it. Dr. Conway Snyder, one of the principal investigators, has pointed out that they want to have one of the Faraday cup sensors pointing straight up so that it will measure the impact of any particles coming from straight out. And then there are these sensors mounted around, all the way around 360 degrees to measure, to detect particles coming from all other directions.
Houston, did you get my last comment?
Negative, Pete. Go ahead.
We can't see a needle in the shorting amp anywhere. It's not at zero. It's not sight.
Roger, we copy. Go ahead.
This particular experiment, the solar wind experiment, is one that won't operate until the LEM has left the surface. This has dust covers over the Faraday cups to make sure that on LEM liftoff there won't be any dust blown into the sensors.
That has to come from a signal from Earth, doesn't it?
That's correct. The dust covers are blown after LEM liftoff on a signal from Earth.
The astronauts working in deploying the scientific experiments on the lunar surface, about 6 minutes behind their regular timeline.
For the seismometers, Houston, is I started to drop a little crater so that the, essentially the hole in the center of the stool has more clearance between it and the ground. Hopefully this will keep the side from
getting
the ground
there. This is that earthquake
Roger,
detector.
That's good. Go ahead.
The seismometer.
We'll see.
We'll see how it works. Looks like it might work. I tamped it also in the small crater there.
He tamped in a small crater for where he placed it.
Can I get helping the solar wind deployed here?
Deploying the solar wind. I wonder. I thought that was the unit that they were having trouble with because of a needle levering device.
Okay, that's good.
Couldn't find.
That's good.
Deploying the five experiments.
Okay, after the solar wind, I get an EMU check, and I'm down to mid-cooling anyhow, and it says LSM off-road. 2 point pulse. Wait a minute, let me buy. What?
Pete Conrad looking at his checklist, LSM offload.
We have to be careful. Don't move sideways or backwards. You don't know what's there. You always got to move forward.
These instructions are to ensure that they don't trip
Pete,
over.
Copy an EMU check.
Ensure that they don't trip over any of the experiments that they've already deployed.
Such instructions come from experience in simulations.
Now that, for one-footed, bloody, pretty good.
You see, this is taking considerable time.
I knock my solar wind over, I'm going to be mad at you. Okay, here, just wait, let me get
you. Pete says if you knock over my solar wind experiment, I'm going to be mad at you.
Don't touch that, I got a one blade bolt off it.
You're listening to astronauts Pete Conrad and Al Bean as they're putting out the scientific experiment units on the surface of the moon. This broadcast coming to you through the Voice of America. They also got an instruction a moment ago to check the condition of the portable life support system on their small chest pack, which has dials for monitoring the condition of the life support system. Al asks, what are you doing anyway there? It's a little difficult to determine which one of those experiment units they're handling at which time. I think one's working on one and one the other there, don't you, Don? This communication leaves us a little in the dark.
It sort of sounds like they're finishing up on the passive seismic experiment, maybe getting ready to do the magnetometer experiment.
Astronauts have been in the EVA.
It looks like it'd be okay, doesn't it? Yeah. Let me do a couple things. Do this, not just that.
2 hours and 14 minutes outside.
Pull it over a little bit more and level it up.
Pull it over a bit more and level it up.
See, that's got kind of a deeper hole there. Yeah, it doesn't have to be leveled, huh? No, because the other one levels on this too, okay? Push it down a little bit. That's a good idea. Look at good.
You're apparently leveling the passive seismic detector.
Okay. Get with it and I'll start up that blade bolt. Yep. That's going to do okay, Pete.
See an instruction here on Their timeline sheet says start front center and release buoyed bolts clockwise. Deploy antenna cable. They're about to that point. Most of the noise in the communication is apparently coming from Pete Conrad's
communication. Yes, right in position there. Just hoping.
Sounds like a good plan.
The astronauts continuing to work on the deployment of the ALSEP package. They're monitoring here while they go through this procedure, which is fairly time-consuming. And they're about 6 minutes behind their schedule on this particular part of their first exploration activity period on the surface of the moon. Pete Conrad and Al Bean talking to each other, and we're listening here on Earth. We'll be back with more reports through the Mission Control Center in Houston shortly.
This is the Voice of America, broadcasting with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. That flight, now some 6 hours and 53 minutes on the surface of the moon, the lunar landing craft Intrepid. The two astronauts, Charles Pete Conrad and Alan Bean, have been outside their spacecraft now some 2 hours and 17 minutes. They have about 1 hour and 13 minutes to go in their EVA or moonwalk period. Now, from the Voice of America newsroom, a summary of late world news.
Man's second visit to the moon is well underway. American astronauts Pete Conrad and Alan Bean are exploring its surface and conducting experiments after landing their spacecraft, called Intrepid, in the ocean of storms right where they wanted to be. Millions of television viewers saw the Apollo 12 crewmen set foot on the lunar surface. First Conrad, then Bean. But something has happened to the television transmission, and that's being investigated. In the meantime, voice communication is fine, and the world is following the moonwalk. A very interested observer, of course, is Richard Gordon. He is piloting the command module called Yankee Clipper, orbiting the moon. Japanese Prime Minister Eisaku Sato and President Richard Nixon will be getting together shortly at the White House for the first of a series of talks. The Washington discussions will cover the return of Okinawa to Japan and many other subjects, including trade relations. In Helsinki, the preliminary talks on strategic arms limitation between the United States and the Soviet Union are in recess for 1 day. The two delegations are giving a joint reception in the evening, then will return to their working sessions. Millions of workers in Italy did not report to their jobs as a 24-hour general strike got underway. The Italian strike was called to protest housing shortages and high rents. At the United Nations, the Philippines joined in the request by Secretary General Uthant that Hanoi allow the International Red Cross to visit American prisoners of war in North Vietnam. In South Vietnam, our correspondent reports no significant ground battles, although he says there was fighting from the northern provinces to the Mekong Delta. Private funeral services have been scheduled in Massachusetts Thursday for former American ambassador to Britain, Joseph Kennedy. The 81-year-old financier saw one of his sons become president of the United States and two others become United States senators. In Houston, Texas, Jane Conrad said, "Yippee," and Sue Bean said, "Outstanding." They're the wives of the Apollo 12 astronauts on the moon, and those were the comments they made when their husbands landed on the lunar surface. That is the news in brief. This is Clark Thornton reporting.
The Voice of America continuing its live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12, now some 117 hours and 29 minutes into the overall mission. The Apollo lunar landing craft Intrepid has been on the surface of the moon now some 6 hours and 56 minutes. Landing there early today at 6 hours 54 Greenwich Mean Time. At the moment, Charles Pete Conrad, the commander of the Apollo 12 spacecraft, and Alan Bean, the lunar module pilot, are on the surface of the moon. They've been out there some 2 hours and 21 minutes. They are expected to stay out about 3 hours and 30 minutes and this on this first moonwalk. They've had something of a problem with their color television camera. It's not working. But they are carrying out all of the other experiments. They're finishing up now with the what we call the ALSEP package. That's the Apollo Lunar Surface Experiment Package, the major experiments that will be set up during this lunar surface time. Let's return now to the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston and correspondent Rhett Turner for a status report.
Well, it's a very important achievement by Bean and Conrad. They have the bubble centered on the passive seismic experiment. This is one of those laborious little chores. They've tamped down some of this very soft lunar dirt, and now in placing it at its planned spot for pickup of seismic activity in the moon, they have to center a leveling device. And this they have done and are continuing to deploy the five major experiment packages associated with this very valuable scientific undertaking, expected to deliver information back to scientists on Earth for about 2 years at least. To review briefly, the television camera, the live color television camera, expected to watch all of this from a distance, failed shortly after it was removed from the modular equipment stowage assembly and has not picked up any pictures for quite a while. They are hoping to come up with some method from the Mission Control Center of restoring service on it, but that hasn't been passed up to the astronauts. Possibly if there is extra time at the end of the ALSEP deployment, they will do that. We'll report more shortly from Houston.
The Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Now in the midst of our first moonwalk with Charles Pete Conrad and astronaut Alan Bean on the surface of the moon. While we're waiting for further developments and for the astronauts to complete the rather complicated task of deploying these experiments, and it is complicated in the fact that all of the major experiments, there are five or six of them, have to be connected to a thermoelectric generator. This is a generator run by nuclear power. Norm Guerin?
A few days ago, Rhett Turner visited with lunar module pilot Alan Bean to discuss EVA periods on the lunar surface and to discuss lunar geology to be studied and sample traverses planned. That's this extra measure of cooperation scientists are teaming up to do for live instructions when they get to that particular mission. Here is Rhett's conversation.
Al, you're going to be on the moon much longer than was Apollo 11. You will have two periods of extravehicular activity. You and Pete Conrad expect to do quite a bit of geological sampling. Let's just talk about that a bit. During your first period outside, what sort of things are you going to look for and how are you going to move around?
As you well know, our first period outside is going to be devoted largely to ALSEP.
Because the experiments package.
Yeah, actually putting out the experiments package. Then with what time we've got available left, which is, let's say, half an hour, three quarters of an hour, it's hard to tell right now because we're going to try to fit in any available free time we have doing as much geology as we can. We're going to do what we call a documented sample. And what we're going to do here is look around for as many different kinds of lunar rocks and lunar geological features we can see. We're going to take pictures of them, not too detailed, but just enough so that we can remember them, so that people on the scientists here on Earth will be able to reconstruct what we saw and get as many different kinds of rocks as we can. We're going to load these rocks in the rock boxes and take them in with us in the first EVA. And this will be sort of the what was formerly the bulk sample. We're just going to try to get a little more information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the second time we get out, our main objective is to do a very good documented sample. And by documented sample, I mean we want to take a look at, once again, as many different kinds of lunar rocks as we can see and many different kinds of unusual lunar geographical features as we can spot. But we want to document them very accurately. For example, if we are going to collect a rock, Pete and I have a sort of skit, or rock dance, as I call it, that we go through. We move over to the rock. Pete steps cross onto it by about 4 feet, and before he steps to this position, he puts down a gnomon. And this gnomon is sort of like a little sundial where we can cast a shadow near the rock, and you can tell the orientation of the rock relative to north or east or anywhere else. And you can also tell the tilt of it, and it also allows you to do some color matching because there's colors on this gnomon. He puts this down near the rock, and then he steps cross sun. I move in then to a down sun position, take a picture. He takes a stereo pair cross sun and then starts to pick up the rocks with his tongs. I then get a sample bag. We put the rock in the bag, maybe a quick discussion about any unusual features,
which we expect to hear.
Yeah, we'll say a few words. Now, one of the interesting things about lunar surface operations is there is a discrete amount of time that you've got, and it's small. So the question is, what do you want to do with it? Do you want to spend it all describing one rock, or do you want to collect as many rocks as you can and say nothing about any of them? Well, there must be a balance, and what we've been trying to do over the last year of training is to get this balance, and we think we've got a pretty good one. At least it's the one we're going to use.
Now, scientists are right here in the Mission Control Center talking to you and coordinating your activities with you so that they can try to document as much of your activity as possible at the same time, aren't they?
That's right. This is going to be one of the differences between our particular exploration and 11's. And also, I think we'll see it on all the following missions. As the lunar surface operation gets more complex, you're going to have to use the man on the surface to make on-the-spot observations and collections. But he isn't always going to have a lot of spare time to sit around and pontificate about just exactly what he's been seeing. So they're going to have a lot of scientists on Earth in the Mission Control Center that are thinking, listening to what you're saying, thinking about what you're saying, and trying to come up with any big picture that they might think of that we might not on there, because we're actually doing a lot of work collecting samples. And as I say, don't have always the time to sit back and reflect. They'll be reflecting, and they'll come back and give us some advice. Go over to this crater. Find this rock. It looks like you're in an area where there may be an unusual number of boulders being ejected from a crater 2 miles to the north. How about working a little bit more in that direction? We can't go 2 miles, but we might be able to go closer to it and find some additional ejected from that crater. And so this is going to be a real team operation between the scientists on Earth and ourselves on the lunar surface.
How much material do you expect to bring back?
We've got the capability to bring back 2 rock boxes full, which would amount to about 60 pounds a box. And that's quite a lot of samples.
Each?
60 pounds each. Originally, they were 30 pounds each, but since that time, we've upgraded some of the... done some additional studies and found that we actually, if we pack the boxes right, 60 pounds during the launch phase wouldn't affect the launch loads any more than 30 pounds improperly packed the way that we thought we were going to pack them at first. But anyhow, we got 60 pounds a piece. We ought to be able to bring those back. In addition, if we have any spare time, we're going to collect rocks or anything else we can and bring them back in some sterile bags. Now, we don't know how much time we've got. We don't know how smooth this is going to go. Of course, we're hoping for the best, but we're going to bring back as much as we possibly can.
About how far do you expect to travel and move around in these geological traverses?
There's been a lot of discussion that that you can move, you know, a half a mile away or a mile. There have been a lot of ideas on this. But this, once again, is a trade-off, too, on what you want to do. If you want to go out a mile and come back, you can probably do it. But the problem is you're not going to have a lot of time to tarry and pick up samples and to make evaluations. So somewhere, once again, there's a sort of a balance. Go so far and pick up a certain number of rocks. Now, what we're going to have to do, I think, is discipline ourselves, lay out a proposed traverse before we get out of the limb to go let's say, to crater A and then go over to scarp B and then back to crater C and then home. And then we're going to have to kind of stay on this timeline. If we find we're tiring a bit, we may have to cut it short. If we find out we're spending too much time collecting samples, we may have to press on out of an area just so we can cover a certain traverse. Now, this is one of the beauties of having man in the program. He can start out on one of these. If he finds anything particularly interesting, he can deviate slightly from the plan. Mm-hmm. We'll be working with the people in Houston, too, and they'll be listening to what we have to say and can come up with some other possible good ideas.
Well, good luck on that, and we'll be expecting to see how good a geologist you turn out to be, Al.
Thank you.